kind of thing, right? Like, we want to have people over, and we want to not just entertain, but we want to sort of create some relationships, and we want to have people. And she talks about the stress of what it is to do that. And so so she is talking about the Mary and Martha story with Jesus and how Mary chooses the better part, and Martha is just hostressing the whole time. She's just in the kitchen and getting fussy with her sister, right? And she said, the better part of what? The better part of hospitality? Is it possible that true hospitality is not about perfect food or fancy furniture? Could the better part of hospitality be listening? If you can't do both, could the better part be focusing on your guest instead of trying to impress or even feed him? Could the better place be the family room at the foot of your guest instead of tucked away in your kitchen? Maybe. Maybe hostessing is not really about the host, but about the guest. And then she goes on to talk about how she issues an invitation to her friends. And she says, dearest friends, I have decided to face my hostessing issue by having you all over the week after we move into our new home. Please note the following things. Bring food. I don't have any. Bring a seat. We don't have many. No fabrics other than flannel will be permitted to cross my doorstep. Pajamas, please. Don't be a show-off. Use the bathroom before you come because I'm all out of Windex. Whatever the thing is you like to drink, please bring that thing. Also bring something to drink out of that thing. Drink that thing out of. I can't deal with the glasses situation right now. Too many different types of glasses. It's ridiculous, if you want my opinion. Also, at 9 o'clock, you will say, we should go. And I will say, no, please stay. Don't stay. Go. I'm really, really tired, and I'm just trying to be polite because etiquette is extremely important to me. Love you like a sister, G. And she said that they all came, and they all did all of the things. They brought the food. They came in their pajamas. It was like a pajama party for adults, right? But she, I think that's part of what I think is so great about that is that she, again, it's like realizing your own limitations and being okay with that, and then surrounding yourself with people who will love and respect you anyways. And so the question that I sort of was going to pose to all of us is, have you ever had a similar experience where you have trusted other people enough to suffer with you through something that is a stressful event, but that you really wanted to do? I'm getting a head nod again over here.
Oh, you're speaking my life right now.
Tell me about it.
In it.
Tell me about it.
Well, my father recently passed away, and so my mother is moving in with us, and so we're in the process of selling our home, buying our home, moving into our home, and getting her out of her house right now. So It has taken a lot of I need help, which is not easy for me at all, like to actually admit to people that I need them. Rather, like, reach out and say I need your help is difficult, to say the least. So I've had to do it a lot of pride sucking away and just saying, I know that this is what it looks like, but can you please come over and help me out? And it's not going to be any better, and this is how it is. So it's definitely been a lot of embracing challenges. So, and I'm sitting thinking as we're going to entertain today.
And have no food.
Trying not to have anything in the house. We've got to pack and all this stuff. Oh, we're still going to have people over. So. Yeah. We thought about throwing our housewarming while the house was still empty. So that it was clean. Like, nobody could say that the house was never clean. Just stay here lonely. Just come on over.
Yeah, I actually thought that that was a smart idea to do it a week after you move in, because nobody has expectations that it'll be perfect.
Right.
They're a lot lower at that point. Actually, not that your fans actually care, but you feel
I care. That's my problem. It's my obsession to make everything perfect when everybody arrives. So, and I told our whole family last night, I said, Russ, we're just moving in. We're not going to actually, like, live in our house, and we're just bringing stuff over. That's all that's happening this week. Just live with the knowledge that you're going to have a bed to sleep in and a toilet with toilet paper.
That's right.
Past that, I promise nothing right now.
Pretty much all you need, I think.
Yeah, there's lots of pizza and spaghetti in our lives.
So. Does anybody listen to Jen Hatmaker's podcast? No? Okay. So Jen Hatmaker is another one of my favorite mommy bloggers. She doesn't just blog about mommy things, but when she does, I'm very much relate to her. But she has a podcast that she just started, like, what, maybe 2 months ago? Have you listened to it? You don't know? Okay. It was a couple months ago. But the first one that I listened to, she was talking about with Shauna Nyquist. I don't know if any of you know who she is, but she's written a bunch of books about, and hospitality is, like, her gift. Like, in the Bible, where it says there are people who have this gift, like, she is it, okay? And so the two of them are talking on this podcast sort of back and forth about what it means to really give the gift of hospitality. And Shauna puts a lot of love into the cooking that she does, but she's not really as much of a housekeeper. Like, it's not about the house, it's about the table. And so she'll make the table, you know, glorious, right? But then there's, like, a basket of laundry over in the corner, you know, like, because she's like, that's, nobody cares about that. And then they were talking about this other woman, and I've forgotten her name at this point, but she is like the Emily Post of today, if you will. But one of the things that she does every time she has a dinner party is that she will leave a basket of clean laundry out in the open so that when people come into her home, particularly other women, they're like, oh, thank God she's normal. You know what I mean? Because otherwise, and she does it on purpose. Because she doesn't want people to feel like there's this, you know, impossible standard that she's setting, because they do like a rotation. It's a dinner rotation, kind of like a foyer group or something like that. And so when people come into her home, she does go all out, but that's like what she does for a living, right? She's a writer and she blog, you know, so like when she's not actively writing a book, her schedule is a little more flexible, you know, so she's able to keep her home really lovely, and because she's very successful, she has a housekeeper, you know, I mean, like, all the things, right, that you kind of, like, want your life to be, but she intentionally leaves this basket of clean laundry out so that people, like, kind of go, when they walk in.
I think that's my strategy now, is to be like, I did all of this on purpose to make all of them feel better.
I was just thinking it was clean laundry.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this knowledge now. If I see laundry, it's going to be all staged. So walking to my office and like my desk, it's like, I mean, it's never been clean, ever.
Yeah.
Like, never. I think one time I even posted a picture on Facebook, just, does everyone's desk look like this all the time? And it was like, I really got a ton of feedback. Because there is, I'm a pretty neat person. And
right.
My house is pretty much put together a lot. That's just my personality. But my office, I don't know what it is. Like, it's just a pit. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I have to find something, it's going to take me at least 10 minutes.
Yeah, I understand that. I feel that way too. I feel like that's our kitchen, because that's like the... From the garage, that's where we walk in, straight into the kitchen. Yes. So there's the girls' backpacks, our bags, my purse. And if I don't put my purse in my purse spot, I don't know where it is. And, you know, and then we have the phone spot. And if our phones aren't in the phone spot, we don't know where they are. And inevitably, like, one of the children has run off with them and, like, hidden it under a bed or something like that. And so things just get... But our kitchen, for sure, is that like, kind of like the regurgitation of the day all over the place, and it's clutter everywhere. So there's another part in here, going back to self-compassion, where she writes about a bike race that she did for AIDS research. And she's like, how much was it again? I can't even remember. 280 miles. From North Carolina to Washington, D.C. And this was before she was sober. So this was, it was kind of, she was kind of going through a little bit of withdrawal during these 280 miles, which 280 miles on a bike would have been, and she wasn't like a cyclist. She really didn't have any interest in riding a bike. She said that, you know, that her friends who she rode with, their private parts were raw for like days because they didn't ride bikes, but they thought, hey, it's a good cause. We're going to ride 280 miles on our bikes, right? And so she talks about how she cries a lot while she's riding, because she just, it's so hard, and how difficult it was for her to do this. And she said the problem was that there was no quitting. Even quitters like me couldn't quit. Nobody said it. We all just knew. Even so, I'd also know that I just couldn't take this next mountain. I just couldn't. My soul was willing, but my body was close to dead. So I approached one of the mountains, already defeated, and a thin, gray-skinned, baldish man on his own bike rode up beside me. The man had hollow cheeks and eyes that were set far too back like caves. His leg muscles looked painted on. Just muscle and bone, so skinny and small, like a jockey with a vicious flu. I made confused eye contact with the grayish man, and he put his hand on my back. He read my pain and said, "Just rest, I'll push you." And I cried and rested my legs and let myself be carried. I didn't understand how he was doing it, how he was pushing me up that hill, riding his bike and my bike, one hand on his handlebars and one hand on my back. But slowly together we made it to the top. And I squeaked out a thank you, and he looked right at me with his cavy eyes and said, "Thank you." Then he turned away from me and rode back down the hill to carry another rider who couldn't carry himself. Yeah. Jeez. So when have you been able to let yourself rest and be carried by someone else? Can you think of a time? Preferably recently.
I called my family to come help me this week. My husband's going out of town, and we had, every night we had something going on, and I'm a little pregnant. and my sister, who has three kids of her own, came down from Colorado. We dropped everything, and literally I called her Monday morning to ask if mom and dad were available this week, like totally going around. And she's like, "What's wrong?" And I'm like, "Not much. I mean, I just, busy week." And she's like, and she called me back an hour later and said, "Check your email. I got my flights together."
Mm-hmm.
Wow. She came down. It was the greatest week. And got everything done. And it was wonderful.
I think I'm good about asking for help from, like, my family. Like, to say, you know, that's easier. Not as good. Like, when I had my babies, I mean, my mom came and did laundry, cooked every meal, and, like, never even made me, like, I didn't even have to ask. Like, she just was there, you know? But, like, as far as, like, when you're having a hard time as a friend, I'm not as good about that. Like, I need to work on being able to reach out more and being, you know. I had, like, a hard time. My dad had a brain aneurysm with a bunch of stuff going on a couple years ago. Like, I was kind of falling apart, and I mean, I went to my doctor, I was like, "I'm having, like, these chest pains, I feel like I'm having a heart attack." She's like, "You're having a little bit of panic, you know, it's anxiety," and I was just like, "What?" I mean, I haven't felt like that since I had a horrible job, and it was just god awful. But I finally did turn friends, was like, okay, and they're like, we got it, like, yes, and I'm great at being that we got it person, but I'm very bad about asking for that help.
Mm-hmm. I think we are sort of conditioned in a lot of ways to be the helper, mm-hmm. but not to be the one who asks for help.
I'm a great helper. I am there for you, but I am terrible when it comes to asking for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Brene Brown says that the way that we ask for help says something about what we think about helping others. And she says that when we are able to ask for help openly and freely, it means that our souls are opened to then be able to give more help. That it's actually a reciprocal action, which is not easy for me. I don't really, you know, I'm the person who will say yes to anything you need, but I'm also fine. Like, I'm fine. I don't know if you knew that, but I'm always fine. And, you know, I'm obviously not fine at all, but going back to the point of treating others the way you would treat someone you love. Like, if someone asked me to do something for them, I would be like, of course. Like, you know, as long as I'm free, I'm there. But why do I not feel like when I need something, I can turn to someone without them being resentful or angry or frustrated or thinking that I'm not perfect? Because mm-hmm. I'm sure people think I'm perfect. I'm sure that's the real issue. You know, like, no, of course not, you know. And when I walk into somebody's house and they have laundry, like, I don't care. I'm really excited to be seeing people I love. But my, you know, manic getting ready for someone to come over is just as fierce.
Mm-hmm.
Erin, your sermon you gave about the bathroom.
Ugh, Monday, Thursday,
like,
was the
still,
best.
Like, I don't have many sermons that stuck with me. Like, that one really, it was really good. After y'all hear it, it was really good.
About, Monday, Thursday.
Bathroom, you get it all perfect.
Family service.
That was good. In fact,
I do have a bathroom that I don't let people use.
When
so
I was,
that
when
was
I was
a real
doing
story.
This, I was like, Erin knows because of the bathroom sermon.
Like, you're not allowed to go upstairs. Actually, I have two floors so that the downstairs floor can be the public area, and the upstairs is a total wreck. And so when people are like, I'm going to go, I'm like, no, you're not, actually. Let's stay. I should get a gate.
I was going to say, I have an extra one you can have. And you can totally be like, it's for the cat.
It's just, oh gosh, yes. So the bathroom sermon, which I had not thought about in this moment, is one image of that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. One of the, I don't know if this is like the way that I help friends at work, but we have about 5 or 6 employees at Parrish who have all had a baby in the last, well, since May. I think there were like 4 due in May. And so I always try to check in, especially with the mommies, because I'm a mommy. But I also try to check in with the dads who've had babies and just be like, so how are you? How's your wife? Is the baby sleeping? That kind of thing. But I feel like one of the ways that I'm able to help people, because I do a lot of like, if you just want me to come over and hold the baby so you can take a shower, or if, you know, cause most people want to bring food, or they want, you know, and of course nobody really wants to overstay their welcome, but then there's, and this, it happens like when people die too, right? Like they come and they're like, okay, I'm going to go, because they either say the wrong things or they don't know what to say, and so it is really difficult to just sit and be. And so what I try to do, because most of them have not called upon me for meals or to come hold their babies, and I'm like, I don't know why I'm really good at holding babies. But one of the things I always try to tell them is how important it is to ask for help when you need it and to let people help you, especially in those first like couple of months when they were on maternity leave and that kind of thing. I was like, you are going to feel like you have lost your mind. You are going to feel things that you never thought you could feel about a little tiny human who you have loved since the moment you heard about it, but right now you hate. You know, like, I mean, not because you actually hate your kid, but because of all the crazy that happens to you when you're sleep deprived and when you're hormonal and, you know, like all of those things, right? And so one of the things I always tell them is, like, when people say, what can I do? If you don't want to give them the baby so that you can have a break, I mean, I don't know, but, like, my shoulders always were burning from, like, this position just all day long, you know? And so I wanted someone, and we actually had a neighbor who came over, and this was when my older daughter, Palmer, was an infant, and she was horrible. That's not true. She was colicky, and that made everything horrible. But I just remember I had been in like my nightgown for 3 weeks, I think, and it was the same one and it was gross and I really needed a shower. And so she said, let me take her. She's fussing. Let me take her. Cause she could tell I was like, I don't know what to do. And she already had 2 kids who were in, I think, junior high at that point. So she was like, let me do it. And she got her to fall asleep. And I was like, okay, you know, but like while she was fussing and crying, she was like, just go take a shower, like do whatever you want to. And when I came out, she's sitting on the couch holding my sleeping baby. And I was like, I both love and hate you right now because I'm grateful that this is happening. However, why won't she do that on me? And of course it was because I was all stressed out and, you know, all the things, but yeah, like let people do these things to help you. Or if you're the one going, right, and you don't know what to do, and you do see the basket of clean laundry, just start folding it. You know, like, I mean, there's so many, and so that's one of the things that I try to tell these young parents, especially because a lot of them are first-time parents, is like, when people walk in and say, well, is there anything I can do for you? Be like, yes, here's the laundry, you know, or yeah, could you go change the other kids' sheets? Or, you know, I mean, like, there's any number of things that we really need people to help us with. Because when you get to a certain point, again, whether it's new life or death or whatever it is, like, you just can't do it all and you can't do more. And so that's one of the ways that I feel like we can have a little bit of compassion for ourselves is by asking for help. And it's so hard. I'm terrible at it, too. Like, I'm awful. But I'm really good at telling other people how to ask for help. So I had a couple other examples. Excuse me, in Love Warrior, how many people have had a chance to read this one or have read any part of it? No? Okay.
And I don't have a watch, by the way.
Oh, okay. We're good. It's 10:45. So in Love Warrior, she talks about how when she gets chronic Lyme disease and she gets very sick and she feels like she's dying and all these things, and so one of her friends
invites the family down to, this is when they're, I guess they're living in Virginia, maybe? I don't know. They're living somewhere in the South, they call it. And so invites them down to Florida, to Naples, Florida. And they go down, and she said that after a few days, she started feeling better just by changing her scenery and being out in the fresh air and being on the beach and all this stuff. And so she and her husband are talking, and he looks at her and says, "We should move here." "Yes," I say, "we should. This feels right. We need to get away from everything except each other. We need time, space, sun, and palm trees." Craig calls his boss the next day and says, "I'm moving to Naples to save my wife's life." His boss says, "Go." So then the question that I had is, I'm sorry, real quick. She talks about sift, the word to sift. I'm sorry, the word crisis comes from the word to sift. And she said, "I'm afraid because a health crisis is a hard time to move. I remind myself that since crisis means to sift, a crisis is the perfect time to let the extra fall away so only the important will remain." We start to sift. So when is a time that you've let things fall away, particularly in a crisis, so that you can save your own life or the life of someone you love? And it could be life as you know it. It doesn't have to be your physical life, but, you know, your... the important things in your life. Right, when we think of that act of like sifting.
I think for me it's been largely internal, like letting other people's perceptions of me fall away in a sense, or what I think they think about me. In order to just not have all that inside my head. I mean, I can barely manage my schedule, much less try to figure out what all of you think about me at the same time. You know, I mean, I can only live one life, and there's only one actual person that I have any control over, and that's myself. And so for me, letting the idea that I can control everyone else also simultaneously had to fall away in order for me to live without just... a lack of a sense of self that is required, I think, in order to live into who you are.
You guys want me to ask the question again? I mean, I know it's kind of heavy, but when was the time when you've let yourself or let things fall away, perhaps in a crisis, so that you can save your own life or the life of someone you love?
Saving a life sounds very dramatic.
Yeah, hang on. I'm pretty lucky.
I mean, there's nothing I've done that's actually physically saved someone's life. Now, there have been things that have restored sanity or balance or...
What about one of those?
Well, I can give you one of those. And about the closest thing I can think of is having just had our daughter in Florida and my husband's world is falling apart at work. I mean, he's coming home every day and he's just completely miserable. The environment at work was so toxic, and Cannon's about 6 or 7 and... so comfortable, and my friend group, my mommy group is perfect, and you know, my security is completely there, my base is all about me, I'm all completely settled, it's good, stay at home mom, I'm getting a handle on this, and he is completely miserable, and he comes home and, you know, talks about the fact that he's been asked to develop this technology, and then he's been asked to go to Texas and explain this whole thing, because they're going to move the whole process to Texas. And he says, "How would you feel if I, you know, presented it in such a way that maybe it becomes integral that I go to Texas and you know, because the situation in Florida is so bad?" And I said, "Whatever you need to do, honey, you know, as only you can." And so I just had to give up that life and what I had established there and come find new happiness and new balance and new mm-hmm. situation there, because it was completely, mm-hmm. It was destroying who he was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it all turned out well, but just one of those situations mm-hmm. where you have to do what you do.
Mm-hmm. It's very unselfish of you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I think that's a courageous act. Like, that is an act of bravery to be able to put someone else before you.
Yeah, but I mean, it turned out to be the best thing. Great for my daughter, great for him, great for me, all good.
You said,
hey, we got you.
Yay!
A minute ago, you said restoring sanity. I don't know what that means for you, but I think for me that does mean saving life in a lot of ways.
Sure.
When we first moved here, my husband's back was out. I was moving from being a stay-at-home mom to my job, but my job didn't start until August, and we moved in late June. And I had a, how old was she, 15-month-old, and Palmer's 2 years ahead of that. So, and they were at home all summer with me, and I was like Dallas was like supposed to be the actual light at the end of a very long dark tunnel. And we got here, and my mom and stepdad were in Houston for cancer treatment as well as triple bypass surgery. My dad and stepmom, who supposedly had retired, were both working full time. So all the people who were supposed to be able to help me weren't. And of course my husband was like either on narcotics for his back or in so much pain that he couldn't move anyways, you know? So it was like, and that for me started a, like about a year, year and a half of, no, that's not true. About 8 months, I guess, of, depression and anxiety and eventually therapy to get through all of that. But for me, the thing that sort of brought me sanity that helped other things fall away was that I had not really been taking care of myself very well. So when I started taking better care of myself, the other stuff, so it was like a reprioritizing, I guess, in a lot of ways. And so when I was able to do that, and when Jared was healthy again, because he eventually had to have surgery and all kinds of other things, but when all of that, like, again, sort of reprioritizing, it was nice to be able to go, okay, so I didn't vacuum this week, or I didn't, you know, I didn't get to mop, because we also have two dogs and a dog run and a doggy door, which means there's almost always dirt everywhere, you know, I mean, it was like, and so it really did help me sort of remember, like, what those priorities are and the actual things in my life that need to happen in order to keep the sanity. So I don't know if that maybe spurs some other memories of something like that in other people, but yeah, I mean, again, it could just be saving your metaphorical life. It doesn't have to be physical. It can just be like saving your mental health, which greatly affects your life. It could be a physical health issue. It could be any number of things. So
when Katie and I first got married and we moved to Dallas, she had just recently immigrated, so she could not. She couldn't work, she couldn't drive. She couldn't drive on the correct side of the road.
No.
And I was at a job where I was basically gone Monday through Friday, sometimes Monday through Saturday. And within like 2 months of being married, she was miserable. I mean, hated every single day. She got up, she didn't have any friends, she didn't have a job, she couldn't go anywhere. She could walk to the Albertsons in Uptown, that was about it, you know. And so it became really obvious really quickly that something had to change, and so stopped. I mean, basically started like full-time job search. Like, I have to find a different place to work. I have to find something where I don't travel, and we have to get a second car. Mm-hmm. And that just like became our mission mm-hmm. in life. Because she would ride the bus every day to Fair Park, and there's nothing wrong with riding the bus to Fair Park, but she did not like it. It was not fun. Mm-hmm. And where, like, that would just change our whole mm-hmm. life. So it's from being, like, you know, 20-somethings, like, we're going to live this cool uptown life, to, like, we have to get a car. I need another job really quick. It just, because, I mean, it was like, that was our very new marriage was not mm-hmm. going great at all. So mm-hmm. we had something that had to change. Mm-hmm.
I have a friend, and her husband was hit by a car while he was riding his bike, and it was 10 years ago. And she's really, I'm best friends with her sister, but the family is like, has been there for me since I moved to Dallas. And so I just didn't know what I could do to help. And she was so hesitant to ask for help. And it was like right away we realized her life, the new normal was, you know, he's in a wheelchair. He's cognitively there, but his speech is very bad. And, you know, I mean, it's just, and they have a teen now. They have a teenager at the time, a seven-year-old. And so I couldn't, there were things I couldn't do because I had two small children. But what I could do is I could cook, and I like to cook, and they have this, now he's like 6'4", huge football player kid, and like, so I just, and to this day, I'll make a meal, every now and then I'll just make him a meal and bring it over, and it's finally after I think the fifth thank you note, I was like, this isn't going to stop, like you got to stop with the thank you notes, like I'm just going to call you, it's going to be last minute, but that's how it works, and put it in your refrigerator, and she said, like, some days it just gave her sanity. And it was, like, it was so good for me because as being a stay-at-home mom, a lot of times you're just trying to deal with yourself and you feel like I'm not helping anyone besides barely keeping my head above water. But I think she helped me realize how much it really, truly helped her. Mm-hmm. And it was something that, you know, I didn't feel like was that much of a challenge, but, you know, it was a great way to help her. Mm-hmm. Still is. And he told me he loves my cooking. And, like, you know, we have a special relationship now, him and I. So.
That's awesome. Okay, I'm going to move on because we just have a few minutes left, and you may need to...
I'm not in the 11:15.
Oh, okay, great. Awesome.
I'm going to get to not run out.
So then later on, after she, after Glennon finds out about her husband's infidelities, and she has they've separated, and then she's invited him back in the home, but she felt overwhelmed by his presence there, and she didn't know how to act or what to do or anything like that. She's kind of having a little, not like a panic attack, but she's very uncomfortable and she doesn't know what to do. So she goes and packs a bag and tells her husband, she's like, I'll be back in a few days. I have to leave. And he was like, that's okay. I got it. You go do what you need to do. And so she goes to, a hotel in their city that's on the beach, and she spends all day, on the beach, like wrapped up in a blanket. She's kind of like in and out of consciousness as far as like when she feels sleepy, she closes her eyes and takes a nap, and when she feels awake, she's awake. And she goes back and forth between her room, which is also like a beachfront room, and the beach kind of all day, and she does the same thing the next day, and she watches the sunset. And she says, the other people on the beach start to leave, but I'm not ready. I stay still, so I learn that the sky keeps exploding once the sun is gone. Deeper reds and brilliant purples continue to wrap around me like blankets until it all fades into pitch navy. Then I turn around and catch a glimpse of the moon, the silver boomerang in the sky that seems to have appeared out of the literal blue. But I know the moon's always there too, waiting for its time to be seen. The day has to fall to make way for the night, and the night has to surrender its place so the day can have its turn. This strikes me as a holy rhythm. I wonder if whatever created this rhythm of the tides and the sky and the sun and the moon has a holy rhythm for my life, too. I consider that perhaps I'm in the middle of a cycle. Maybe there's a time for everything. Maybe there is a timekeeper. and so it's not so much a question as just kind of an observation of that she discovers that she can... Because throughout all of her stuff, I would say that she recognizes that God exists, and that, you know, and she talks about how she has a relationship with Jesus, and there's all this kind of stuff. But, and I feel like, I mean, I don't remember who said it during the stewardship thing this morning, but I feel like as Episcopalians, right, we're like, yes, we know God, we know Jesus, we do the liturgy. Like, that's our way of... that's the way of living out our faith. But I think sometimes as Episcopalians, we get very rigid in that liturgy, and we get very caught up in the liturgical aspect of it that sometimes we actually forget that we are worshiping God, and that we forget that, like, God is... like, wants to be a part of it, too. And sometimes when we're so rigid, it makes it hard for God to actually move us. And so I just kind of wonder about, again, sort of a time, perhaps, that... or maybe you need a time. I don't know. When you remember how much you can trust God,
because it is so hard sometimes, I think, for us to, and this is not as Episcopalians, this is as humans, it is so hard for us to sort of rest in the presence of God without feeling compelled to do something or to speak or to, I don't know, inner monologue, you know, but just to sort of be and let ourselves rest, like just wrap up in a blanket on the beach and sleep when we need to sleep and wake when we need to wake and be a little bit more in tune with that, with God through that, like letting God take care of us, I guess, more of a providence kind of a thing. I need a whole lot of that. And I want to run away to the beach. I think I might have said that to Aaron while I was like, I want to go to the beach and just wrap up in a blanket. Okay, since we are short on time, y'all can keep that one as food for thought. The last thing that she talks about in Love Warrior is she and her husband have sort of rekindled their marriage in a lot of ways. She begins to trust him again. Things start to feel better. But
Melinda, you have a
sorry, we're almost done. But she kind of has this understanding that whether they stay together or whether they end up getting a divorce, like whatever ends up happening, that that there's enough love between them now, whereas before it seemed it was love, but it wasn't in a fully known sort of way. And so she seems to trust not just herself and not just her husband, but she also sort of trusts that God's redemption, whatever that looks like, again, whether they stay together or whether they split up, that God's redemption is there no matter what. And I feel like that's like a really powerful sort of moment of surrender in a lot of ways. Like, and I know I've had those before, but probably not to the sort of import that she has in this instance. But just thinking about like, there are times when we just have to let go of that control, right? We just have to trust that God and the people who we've chosen to surround ourselves with will care for us enough that it's all going to be okay, even when it feels like it's not going to be okay. So that was just my last thought. And I know if y'all are going to church, you should probably go. But thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. And if you have any questions that you might want to ask, actually, unfortunately, do still have to run away because I'm celebrating at our Bhutanese congregation, so I have to go grab everything before the 11:15 starts. But feel free to email me any questions you have, and we'll submit them to her team. So thank you so much.